So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
And today, we're going to be diving into the Android 11 beta. Very exciting. I know, I think one of us
is really
more...
Are you really excited, though?
One of us is more excited about this than the other, but it did bring to mind the idea of mobile platforms and where we are. So, we'll be getting to that soon. If you've been enjoying the show, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. It's all very helpful. And if you've got any questions or comments, drop us a note at podcast@engadget.com. We've also got a forum. And today, to join us to talk about the Android 11 beta, we've got Florence Ion, freelance journalist and podcaster. Flo, how's it going?
I would have to say there's actually 2-to-1 ratio going on right now in terms of excitement for Android 11. So yes. You are outnumbered today, Devendra. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and where can we find your workflow? You're all over the
place,
right?
I am all over the internet. I do a show on Twit every week. I do a show on Relay FM every week. I've got my own podcast. I write for you guys. I write for Life Hacker. I write for Android Police. So I have my hand in many pots.
You're Miss Android. I feel like you're tied to so
Thank
many
you.
Android things. You are a perfect voice to bring on for this. Although I feel like I painted myself into a corner here because I already have enough like Android fangirlism to deal with from Sherlyn. So now, now it's like double. Okay. So first of all, what is the Android 11 beta? I'll let you guys take it away.
Yeah. So, okay, so the Android 11 beta is basically like a preview version of, you know, the next version of Android, right? Which the current stable version is Android 10. Mm-hmm. It was meant to, well, we were expecting it at the supposed Google I.O. Nobody knows if, you know, that was meant to be revealed there. But, you know, now that Google I.O. is not happening, well, not now that, but anyway, it got canceled. And then Google was like, here, we're going to do a launch event on June 3rd. And then the Black Lives Matter protests happened and they decided to delay it by another week just because it wasn't time to celebrate, was their wording. And now this week we got the Android 11 beta. We've been able to download this potentially buggy version of the software onto our Pixels. Pixel 2 or newer, if you're listening and you want it. I don't know, Flo, have you played with it? Because I have my thoughts, but I'd love to hear if you know what you thought of it.
So we've been talking about this on All About Android for like weeks, months, about like what to expect. I got it on my Pixel 3 last night because I'm... Mm-hmm. Side note, I am switching to the OnePlus 8 because I'm trying this like new...
How dare you?
Well, I'm trying... Well, I've been on a Pixel for like 4 years going on now, and so I'm trying to like... diversify my experiences. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But in that process, I uploaded the Android 11 beta onto my Pixel 3, and like thus far, it's been fine. I'm having some SIM card issues, so I'm stuck on the Pixel 3 with whatever this beta is. So that's going to be an interesting. I think I'm going to live with it today and kind of like use it and see. And see how it really serves me. Thus far, I will tell you, like, my first thing that I thought of, even the first thing I thought of when I got up this morning at 6, thank you, baby Mona, was, what is this, like, there's apps that are docked on the first home screen.
What are these apps? I know Sherlyn has
so
a lot to
originally
say.
Originally, I have, like, the way I do my launcher is I have everything strategically placed on the different home screens. Like, I've been doing this for years as an Android user. That's why I like it.
Yes,
but
exactly.
They just added this dock. It's like, here's your most used apps. Like, but I didn't ask for that, though. I don't.
It's funny because, like, hardcore Android users, right? You guys, I feel like a big reason you're on this weird platform is a customizability.
Yes.
And just, like, the ability to, like, shape your home screens into many different ways. Why take that away a little bit, Google? Man.
Okay, so that, I think, if I'm not wrong, Flo, is the suggested row on the home screen. And it is something that they, for me, I don't know if for you they did this, but for me, they asked my permission before enabling it. there was a Pixel app that, you know, threw out like a notification that was like, hey, enable this feature. And then my favorite thing about this feature, just from like my Schadenfreude perspective, is that when you enable it, yeah, it does like pop up an extra row of apps at the bottom of your home screen. When you disable it, the row of apps goes away, but that space remains behind.
Oh, that's not good.
I mean, you could put other stuff in there eventually, right?
You have to reorganize all your apps and bring them back down one row. Gotta love it. Enjoy that. But it's just a funny little bug. I will say, like, I understand your experience. Like, I've been on a Pixel for so long too, and then I've switched back and forth between a Galaxy S20 Ultra, and then also a OnePlus 8 that I've been trying to just, you know, use because my Pixel 3 screen is a little cracked. But I don't know. I mean, I still really love the Pixel UI, and that's why I think the Android 11 beta means so much to me, because it's... Mm-hmm. It is like firsthand, like the first changes you'll see like ever on Android, which is such a huge platform. Like, let's be honest here. It's the biggest mobile software, mobile OS in the world. And yeah, it's a little fragmented, but
A little fragmented?
Even all of it.
A little statement. Just a tad. Yeah. And I mean, the fact that we have to get used to a OnePlus phone versus a Samsung phone versus a Pixel phone is saying something. But anyway.
Yeah, I will say that last night when I was like configuring the OnePlus 8, I was pleasantly surprised to see that the settings were where they were supposed to be. Like, it was very easy for me to jump in and like figure out what was going on and then know what it was that I was getting. On the OnePlus that I was not getting on the Pixel. So like being in the settings.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, I don't have these features on my Pixel.
Yes.
But that said, now I'm waffling between, do I want this new notification interface situation that's going on? Because like I think visually, like, I'm holding up my phone, by the way.
Yeah, this is not a video podcast, Flo.
I know, but I want you guys to have a visual.
I'm looking at you.
Yeah. I appreciate it. I'm
looking. But, so I like the like UI, just the general design of this UI, but I also haven't really used it with a lot of notifications coming through, and that's what scares me.
Yes, absolutely. So okay, so let's get into it, because I feel like we got a little ahead of ourselves, but I'm gonna kind of like run you guys through what to expect with these Android 11 beta. So Google pitched it as revolving around three pillars: people, controls, and privacy. That's just marketing speak. Doesn't make a lot of sense. I'm going to tell you what it's really about. So number one, your messaging is going to be very different. First of all, they're going to introduce this thing called Bubbles, which I'll get to the real experience later. But Bubbles, basically, if you remember, Facebook Messenger had this feature called Chat Heads. And they're like little floating buttons on top of your screen. You can drag them anywhere. You can like leave them on top of other apps and return to a conversation whenever you want to. It sounds great. The other thing is like consolidated device and media controls. There will be like an area in your notifications shade or your quick settings panel at the top of your notifications shade that is dedicated to a persistent media player if you want it. And then if you hold down the power button long for a while, it'll also bring up controls for devices that are connected to your like phone. So like smart lights, for example.
Complicated.
Well, you hang on. It's not terrible. And then there's permissions and privacy. Android 11 is going to enable this new thing called a one-time permission setting, which I think is very good. And then there's just like more like so-called organization of your notifications area by consolidating all your message alerts in one location in your notifications shade right at the top of it. So we'll break it down deeper in a little bit. But overall, I think it sounds like Google's trying to introduce more controls and more ways for you to control things, but also try to help you organize some of these things in the notification sheet. Except for now that I've played with the Android 11 beta, it does not feel organized at all. I don't know, Flo, what do you think?
To be fair, it is a beta. So you're just like, you're already, that contract is like in the name. Like, this is a beta. Yep. This is what you're getting into. But I do agree with you that I think coming from the last couple versions of Android, this just feels very like, whoa, there's a bunch of like new little UI elements. Some of them are helpful. Like, I actually do like that power menu. I think it's a lot easier.
Me too.
Than turning the phone on, unlocking it, tapping on Google Pay, for instance, which I use. But a couple of the other things, like the chat bubbles, don't bother me.
You know what I mean? Like, Facebook has tried bubbles, like Messenger bubbles, like several years ago.
That's where it came from.
I've always hated it. I've always hated it. It's so hard to keep track of anything, right?
Well, and a lot of people hate it. It's like, Bing, hey, friend, how are you doing? Hey, I was wondering. You know, it's like, really?
And also, depending on how Android implements it, it's not a very easy way to organize. Let's say you have like 7 messages going on, then all the heads stack on top of each other, and you're trying to find that one. Say I'm talking to Dev, Ben, Flo, and then like 3 other Engadget people. If I want to look for Flo, how do I do it? Like, it's a process. I will say, though, right now, as part of this beta, and again, Flo's right to point out, it's just a beta so far. Bubbles, the API, only works with Facebook Messenger for now.
Oh, so it's not like
it's not like I even got to see it with
that
another app.
That explains why I haven't had it pop up yet. I don't have. Yeah. I quit Facebook.
Me too. Same. And so I was like, well, one of the reasons I quit Facebook was because chat heads was annoying. And so, well, good luck trying to implement this.
You cannot escape the chat heads. They are they're everywhere
now. We reached out to WhatsApp for comment. We reached out to WhatsApp and Telegram for comment. WhatsApp came back with a no comment. So I don't know if they're actually super enthused by this. You would need developer support for this to be widespread. But the good news is, I think it sounds like we can disable bubbles. It's not going to be something that's in your face.
And you can search for it in the settings panel, by the way. So easily just type in bubbles and then disable,
turn it off.
And when it comes to WhatsApp, by the way, like, aren't they, I think they're a little more precious about their actual chats, because it's a little more protected, right? It's not the same stuff as like Facebook Messenger, even though it's all Facebook. So,
I mean, they're the end-to-end encrypted app on the Facebook family of apps. So, I mean, they're
you can't
maybe
just
a bit
do that in Bubblies just for fun. It's like, guys, we're doing serious business here. It has to be protected.
Well, serious business, but with stickers and Giphy.
But with stickers, What else beyond these very useful sounding bubbles? What else is going on with the Android 11 beta?
One thing I pointed out, and I think Flo, you alluded to as well, is the consolidated notifications for people who are messaging you. So now there's a top area called conversations, and anyone that messages you, let's say in Telegram, on WhatsApp, on Facebook Messenger, it shows up in that corner, in that area. And you can use that as a way to be like, okay, these people need my attention right now, let's get back to them. Or set a reminder for yourself to get back to it later, which I actually think is a pretty cool feature, except for I haven't seen it. It's supposed to be, I don't know, it's supposed to be a bit more like a better way of organizing. I don't like it. I don't want yet another section in my notification shade. There's already a lot. Android already does the alerting notifications, the silent notifications as these little header bars in my notification list, and I don't need so many sections. Flo, do you like it?
No, I think the notification shade, the thing I always loved about Android from the beginning when I first started using it was the notification shade. And I feel like in recent years, it's gotten really, really bloated. To the point where it can get, I mean, right now I have a lot of permanent notifications that live in there. Like,
God, same.
Wise camera is running. Great. IFTTT is working in the background. Like, great. Yes. You're supposed to be able to now easily... I guess silent it. Okay, let's see. So
you can't
really though. Sounds like some notification shade.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
No. Wow. Dev, no.
I'm clapping over here. I thought that was pretty good.
I don't think anybody has gotten notifications right. I think like even Apple with iOS have been reshaping it over the years. It's cleaner than it ever has been, but it's also still like I never want to see that screen. Basically, like if you're a notification, I'm not seeing you immediately. I don't care about you. I'm not going to go browsing around that screen. I don't know if you guys treat notifications differently. To me, they're like emails, you know? I will glance at them and like, oh, are you a good email? I will click on you. Otherwise, my personal inbox is just piling up of like garbage and things I don't actually care about.
I was just going to say, I really like the Windows 10 notification panel because you can just click it in and out, and then you can like, okay, I'm gonna deal with this right now. I'm gonna deal with this right now. So it's kind of like a task list.
Yeah.
Although their pop-ups like are much worse.
Their pop-ups stay around, and then you can't do anything on the window around that area. Are annoying.
But other than that, it's good.
Yeah. Sorry, I got really mad for a second there, but
it's okay.
I got so angry. They've gotten me in trouble before. That's why. but I do think that notifications are a delicate balance. I think it's because these companies can't figure out what really matters to us just yet. And they do need to figure out. But we'll get into like all the different companies and the differences in a little bit. Android, the 11 beta, we talked about the power button menu, which Flo, you and I both like. I do think it's a little easier for me because I only have 5 connected devices, being I live in a tiny apartment. But imagine, I don't know how big of your house is, Flo. How many?
I mean,
how many? It sounds like you have a lot.
How does a podcasting queen live? Tell us about your castle.
Because you guys know I like live in the deep suburbs, and like I'm fully ensconced in the idea of like the smart home. I have so many devices in my house. I have a minimum of 15 like smart display, smart speaker situations going on. It's not.
Oh, I'm so Flo, I'm in the middle of getting ready to move from an apartment to my like first grown-up house. So I am fully ready to like wire up every inch of that house. So I feel you.
Side note, my husband is really into like playing music for the baby. So there's like a Google Home, there's a Nest Mini in every like bathroom.
It's so good.
She can, like,
it's
have,
so
like,
good.
Soft music when she's taking a bath. Anyway, so because of that, I really do like to see this power menu. And as you can see, it's called the Flaric Abode, which is a combination of my name and my husband's name. But so far, the only widgets, I guess I should say, it offers me is the 3 rooms that are on. There's all lights, my office, and in his office. And then, again, I live deep in the suburbs, just FYI. And then we have the 3 Nest cameras.
Okay.
But not all of them. So, like, the doorbell isn't on here, which is something that I would want to have up in front.
Right. Easy access. Yeah.
So
I spoke to Google about this after I tested mine out. So for me, I had to install first the Google Home app on the Pixel, which I for some reason didn't have before the devices showed up, and only my lights are showing up. So I have smart displays, I have smart speakers, and they're not actually showing up on the power menu. Let me describe for our listener, because maybe you need to imagine this graphically, right? So basically, when you long press the power button, the panel slides in, it takes over the whole screen. At the top, you'll see your like Google Pay cards that you've enrolled, and then the bottom half of this panel is dedicated to these little tiles, and they take up like a 2x4x10 grid depending on how many devices. And the first tile is for all lights or all devices, I guess. I haven't seen other devices yet. And then it sounds like, according to Flow setup, there's rooms that are organized based on how you set up your Google Home app or connected device app. Mm-hmm. And then each individual device also gets its own tile following that. So if you have like a smart speaker or a smart light and a smart camera or security camera, they each get their own light. And tapping these tiles turns them either on, off, or if you have a preset like I did, just jumps to that preset. So for me, on my Google Home app, my most frequently used preset is 8%. Get all my lights to 8%, because I guess that's romantic. So when I hit the all lights button, I don't know if for you, Flo, this did it, but for me, you can with one tap turn them all off at once or turn them all to 100%. For me, instead of turning them to 100%, I tap all lights and it went to 8%. So that's, I think, because I had a preset. And I'm not sure if... And then when I spoke to Google, they were like, yeah, we're aware that not all devices... Well, I asked them, they had to ask their team, first of all. And the team was like, oh, yeah, not all devices are showing up yet. We're working to add support for more.
This, by the way, is like the inherent problem with every like smart device collecting app. Because when the Echo Plus, Amazon's Echo Plus, added Smart Hub functionality a couple of years ago, it could only see some of the devices in my house. Meanwhile, I still had to use the Hue app to connect to other things. It's all very confusing. I want some unified smart home standards, folks. Come on. Let's make this happen. They're coming, but eventually, right?
My robot vacuum isn't in that power menu, and like maybe I would like instant access to turn it on and off, you know? I mean,
Exactly, exactly. So Google says it's adding more. Hopefully your robot vacuum will be added to it. But mm-hmm. I mean, Flo, you have a more, I think, like a bigger smart home setup than I do. Do you find that this will be like useful for you moving forward if they add more support?
Yeah, they need to add more support to it because right now it's really, it takes too many taps to go into the Google Home app. Mm-hmm. I'm having, as much as I appreciate the voice functionality, when it comes to like getting the light setting just right in like the baby's room, there's three different smart situations in there. Mm-hmm. And to that end, two different ecosystems running in her room. We have like TP-Link Casa and Hue in there. Just because I have like outlets for some of the lights or whatever. And so getting that like just perfect is very difficult, which is why I put a Nest Hub in there. So I could just, I want something akin to the Nest Hub where I can swipe down and I just have like this control panel, you know, Back to the Future style. Like I could just click and tap and boom, it's like what I want. It's a lot to wrangle. Not that I'm complaining, but you know.
Any other major features, folks? Because nothing's sounding super exciting at this point. We're talking about notification bubbles.
It's not super. Yeah. I don't think personally it's super exciting. I think we're at the point to Android now. I remember back in the day, like when we had the whole UI overhaul. I think it was from Marshmallow to Lollipop to Marshmallow.
Was that 4?
That was super exciting because that was
nice.
Yeah, that was a huge overhaul. So we were like, oh my God. But now it just feels like a lot of maintenance, a lot of trying to keep up with the rest of the industry because I know this is something y'all wanted to chat about, but like in relation to how Apple's doing things and just like how Amazon is coming in with its like smart home stuff, there's a lot of there's a lot of polishing that needs to be done to kind of start getting people sold on this stuff.
I feel like everybody's in maintenance mode at this point. I mean, Apple's the same way. One thing I want to bring up is just that, this is the first Android 11 beta. We'll likely see more stuff happen in future, with future updates. And also, Google does usually have like a bigger event closer to the end of the year where we get some like big features and like newer things to look forward to, right?
Absolutely. I do think that we tend to see Google reserve some of these bigger things like call screening or recorder app that has transcription on device come out around the time of the Pixel phone launch, which is usually in October. We don't know what that looks like this year because of the pandemic and everything. But yeah, as Flo and Dev have both said, this is preview software. They're not going to give away the goods at this stage, really.
I think they do four beta versions before the final. And I was just looking, at the date, remembering it's June. I mean, that means we only have 4 months until that supposed next Pixel launch. And we're still waiting for the Pixel 4a, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah. Which was rumored to come out this month. We don't know.
You had mentioned, by the way, Sherlyn, privacy was going to be a big thing. Can we quickly, what is
this? Happening? Actually, funnily enough, this might be my favorite Android 11 beta feature, which is one-time permissions. You know how when you install a new app, you have to grant it permission to your camera or your mic, at least on Android. I don't know about you guys on iOS. Previously, the permission options were allow all the time, allow only while using the app, or deny. And now you have the option. The options have completely changed. You can only allow while using the app or one-time permission, so like only this time, or deny. So there's no longer the option to access all the time your GPS location or your mic or your camera, which is great. I don't think any app should have background access all the time. And then the one-time permission option is really good for the apps that you download, install, use once, and then forget about, which I think a lot of people do. Flo, did you like this?
Yeah, I like this. Especially I like the fact that it will reset the permission and ask if you haven't used it in a while, because
that's my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, that adds credence to the idea of the assistant, like Google being the assistant in this situation.
I agree. I mean, I still have some issues with Android's understanding of my app habits because
come on. It's just Google. They're just collecting data. Nothing bad's going to happen with that, right?
I always run out of space. Let's not even talk about the base storage fiasco here, but I always run out of space and they're always like, these are your least frequently used apps. Here, delete the MTA subway map. I'm like, yeah, of course I haven't taken the subway in 3 months. You want me to delete it? Right. But like, you know, it's a little not that smart just yet. So I'm not sure. Even that row of suggested apps that we were talking about at the start of the show, it doesn't show me the apps that I use most frequently for sure. Or even does it. This is how I use my Pixel 3 a lot of the time. I go open my banking app and then I look at my account like balance. Then I go open my credit card app so I can make a payment. And right, I've done this repeatedly for a year. And it says it will suggest to you, it will know your habits and try to show you the app that you next want to use. Never, ever, ever has there been a scenario where after I open my banking app, they suggest on that suggested row in the all apps drawer to use the credit card app next. And I'm just like, look, I've been trying to train you up and you're literally being dumb.
Dumb. Apple has been doing some of that. There is some like app suggestion in the pull down menu. Like I often like set my, you know, alarm at night before I go to bed and that'll just resurface when I look for apps and stuff.
Yeah,
so
nice.
That sort of stuff is good. Real quick, any major, like what do you guys want to see in Android 11? Like, is there anything you haven't heard yet from Google? What is your dream feature? Pick one. What is your dream feature to see?
This is hard. I really just want to... I really just want to see, like, I want the settings panel to be easier to navigate because I feel like the way that it is now is very friendly for folks like me and Sherlyn. But when it comes to... folks like my mom and the other people that in my life who use Android, like they're super clueless about what is going on in that settings panel. And I think just having an algorithm figure it out for them is not fair because that's not giving them control over it. That's just like, well, we'll just figure it out for you. Like, no, that's not the point of Android. Like,
make it fully customizable.
Yeah, and I want, this might add fuel to the fire, but I was going to say, I feel like that's more of an iOS thing because you use let me explain.
Exactly.
It's because people go to Apple because they don't want to, I don't want to think about it.
Sure.
I'm talking about mass people. They go to it, I don't want to think about it. I just want it to be easy. And if you come to Android, you're like, wow. It's like, that's cool. You can do all this stuff, but the person is going to just be overloaded by
it. It's not great for everybody. I think before they used to talk about the idea of having like a simpler mode and a more advanced mode. And I don't trust Google for usability in general. So yeah, that stuff hasn't really happened. Sherlyn, major feature?
I would just like better, like, and I don't want this to be a misnomer, but the digital well-being thing that they launched a while ago, I want it to be better at pinging me less. I want it to be in general, I want fewer notifications. There's too many notifications right now. I get so annoyed so easily nowadays, and the notifications persist for too long sometimes. I can't get rid of some of them, too much. So I do think that it's a small ask. I don't need Android to be majorly overhauled. I think that these are tweaks that Google can make fairly easily, and if they focus really on daily use, I think they'll get there. But I mean, I have hope. I do like that. I do like that Android is like a power user OS sort of. But if they want to get more, you know, people on board, they can't just rely on something like a KaiOS or like a simple, very light version of Android. They need to work harder to make the main OS better.
Pixel should be people's launcher, and OnePlus should be the enthusiast one. I feel like we should just do it by manufacturer at this point.
Can I just, when you were talking about OnePlus just now and its OS, I want to like geek out slightly about CyanogenMod and OxygenOS because CyanogenMod was such a dream.
Oh man.
I'm so deep in my bones excited about Cyanogen. So sad that it's gone.
Well, that's why we like Oxygen because it gives you that oxygen of
breath of fresh air.
If you can cut to me right now just playing like a song in my head as you guys are going
what
on
song
and on
are you
about
late?
I know. What's that Simpsons song?
Oh, you're doing Bart.
Oh, you're Homer right now. Yes.
I'm just like, okay. Listen, I've tried a lot of Android devices. I've reviewed Android devices in the past. Yes. It's just not like my daily driver thing. We don't quite know what iOS is gonna be doing this year. There really haven't been many leaks. There was one thing about call recording, which would be really nice. I would love to record phone calls easily and record FaceTime calls. I feel like Apple may not actually release that feature for, you know, regulatory reasons and privacy reasons.
Legally,
but
it's tough, yeah.
I want an easy way to record my calls, people. Come on. Everything can do it. Like, here's the thing. Like, I think all these OSs, they've matured to a point where everyone is just basically doing the basic work. Like, they're all cleaning up things, trying to polish their UIs. I can't think of, like, what new things I'd want from the iPhone at this point. Yeah, we got dark mode last year. We got, like, you know, things improved steadily, but isn't anything super huge, super amazing.
And maybe we're also at the point where people are so used to the way their OSs work that, like, introducing any major sort of change is just annoying. It's just going to be annoying. Yeah.
It's dangerous. It's like when the iPhone 10 launched and, like, the home button had to go and people were like, whoa, what's happening here? And my wife, who is the Android user, and I don't know why. She loves Android.
Yeah, I love her. Yeah.
But I give her my iPhone now and she's just like, a baby funneling. Is like, how do apps work? How does the home screen work? How does anything work?
I'm the same. Yeah. Yeah. I do this stuff for a living.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully, I would like some more unified gestures between both platforms. That would be kind of nice because I think the kind of like way you swipe up from an iPhone and the like multitasking system, that should be common language. That should be how it's working across all our phones. Yeah.
And
I know that
came
from other things before. That was a Palm Pre. You know, that was a Palm OS, a web OS invention.
R.I.P.
Yeah, we all, that's the real geek one, the thing we love. I need to buy one of those dumb things.
I will say that the one thing now that I'm looking forward to, you just reminded me, it's not just something that one OS can achieve. You need the combination of all the OSs, not just unified gestures, but universal text messaging. Come on, like the RCS thing.
Yeah,
like,
good universal text messaging.
Exactly. Cross iOS and cross Android texting that looks the same across all devices. No more green bubble, blue bubble debate. That would be great.
Cross-platform gaming. Come on.
Oh, man, that would be
more of that stuff.
Bring the walls down. I think that would be great. I know that the three of us don't really have a lot of ideas left for what to ask from Apple and Google at this point, but I'm sure you do, listeners. So send us an email to podcast@engadget.com if you can tell us what you really want to see in these future OS updates.
So, Flo, thank you for joining us. Any broader thoughts about the Android 11 beta?
Thank you for having me. As far as broader thoughts come, I think in the next couple of days, as I just enforce myself with this new UI, I'm really going to see how I feel about it. But it's not going to make me leave Android at this point.
Right. It's not bad.
At this point, I'm in this relationship for life.
Right.
So
right.
You're committed.
There's no escaping.
We're working through this no matter what.
Where can we find your work and I guess your future thoughts on this beta?
So you can find my work all over the internet, as I said. The best place to come find me, though, is florenceion.com. That's my website. And I also have this neat little link that I set up the other day, flowrights.tech. So
oh, nice.
That it links to like a Notion page that I made where I have like all these links because I didn't want to pay for Linktree. So
right.
Flow
right. I like your personal site, by the way, Flo, because I keep every time I go to like try to rebuild my personal site, I look at WordPress for like 15 minutes and just like walk away. So
it was a good thing set up. It reminds me of being young on the internet and working out.
I want to do that. I want to have fun with my GeoCities.
That's why I
and
do it.
My
yeah.
Angel Fire. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to do this. You've inspired me, Flo. Thank you so much for joining
us.
Thank you, Flo.
Let's dive into what we've been working on. And I want to talk quickly about Intel's new Lakefield chips. Which sound very exciting, right? These are things we've been hearing about this for the past couple of years. I think since CES 2018 or 2019, like these are low power chips that combine one very fast processor core. So a Core i3 or Core i5 core. It's all getting very confusing. And four modern Atom cores. So the Atom, if you'll remember, are the really low power chips that Intel used to put into, you know, slow, like netbooks and slower devices and even some phones, like they were trying to make that a thing. So this is a chip that combines all of that plus memory into a single processor.
Oh, are these the ones that stack like components on top of each other?
Yes, this is using Intel's Foveros 3D packaging technology. And this is really cool because they're basically stacking chip components on top of each other like Legos. If you imagine what a PCB, you know, a motherboard looks like, everything is flat. Everything is on a 2D plane, kind of interconnected, you know, on that plane, but it's all very flat. Now, to save space, Intel has basically managed a way to create 3D packaging. So you've got multiple chips, like different types of chips all together. So technically, these are going to be 5 core processors, and they're going to have 4 or 8 gigabytes of RAM built in. So there's no like extra RAM connection anywhere else in the motherboard. So that means the actual board looks tiny. If you go look at our Lakefield, if you go look at my write-up, there's a picture of the board. It looks like maybe like a couple packs of gum or something. It's very small.
That's crazy. Fact that they were able to do. I remember interviewing someone from Intel about this at CES either this year or last year. Every
it's
time
hard
it's a blur.
To keep track, yeah.
But the idea, I was just kind of blown away. I was like, this is wild because it's never been done before, and it will save a lot of space. It saves a lot of like it gives you more room to squeeze in other components like battery.
Yeah. A lot of companies have been exploring this, and I think as far as chip designs go, this listen, I'm sure this sounds kind of boring to you if you're just here for like gadget talk, but I'll say this is going to be the heart of future gadgets, right? This is going to be the thing that's going to be in foldables and really, really thin laptops. So I know the Galaxy Book S that you really enjoyed at CES, Sherlyn. So there was the Snapdragon version. This is a Snapdragon competing processor.
Yes. Okay, I would be excited to see what it brings to the table, especially in the space of connected PCs.
Yeah. So very super, super thin laptops. I'm talking like 1 pound, 1.5 pounds.
I mean, the Galaxy Book S is a gorgeous, gorgeous laptop. Yes.
I can't wait. That's going to be one of the first ones with this chip. We know the Surface Neo, the like dual screen Surface is going to be running one of these. These aren't going to be powerful processors, but it's really the combination of a faster core plus some really good low power cores. It can really do some cool stuff. So this is going to be how Intel is taking on Qualcomm and Qualcomm's big push to get into laptops. And this is all interesting as we're hearing rumors about Apple potentially announcing their first ARM-based MacBooks, which means, you know, MacBooks powered by mobile processors. This is a really interesting time we're in. WWDC is in a couple weeks. So we're going to see what Apple's up to. And things are going to get really interesting, you know?
I never thought I'd say this, but I'm very excited about these processor wars. Why am I so into this?
Because
this is so weird.
This is who you are, Sherlyn. These are your true colors. I remember where I was. I was sitting in my IT department. I think like 2005 or 2006 when Apple announced the Intel chip move and how monumental that was. So, and that completely changed the way Apple, you know, Macs worked for the past, you know, 15 years at this point. So this is going to be another major change. It's all very exciting. Go check out my Lakefield coverage. And we're also, remember, we're looking forward to another upcoming Intel mobile chip in a couple of months, Tiger Lake. And that's going to be the one that has like very powerful hardware. And that's going to be the one for like gaming notebooks and stuff. So, yeah, exciting times. Stay tuned for all of our chip news, folks.
What else are you working on?
One other thing. I checked out Whatify, which is a mobile video startup that's a little similar to Quibi, but I'd say a much better Quibi. First of all, they've raised only $10 million, and it's weird to say this in this industry, only $10 million from Andreessen Horowitz and a couple other folks. But compare that to Quibi, which has raised a total of nearly $2 billion. And you see the like level of like the playing field is so different for these two companies. So Whatify is making custom mobile movies that are sort of like choose your own adventure games. So at key points, you could be like, do you want this character to take a drink or put the bottle down or something like that? And you can swipe up, swipe down, and, you know, you'll continue along to a path, to a specific ending. There are two movies right now. They each have between like 25 and 50 different endings. So there's like a reason for you to go back and play through these things.
So yeah, this sounds like Netflix's Choose Your Own Adventure.
It is.
But
it's
like...
very similar. Yeah. Okay. But it's also party based. So you can join up with your friends. So I could sit and, you know, watch this movie along with you. And when we get to decision point, and it's not happening like at the same time, but basically we'll hit the decision point around the same time. You make a choice. I make a choice. It gets polled. And then the whole group, like, everybody has to concur on one choice for it to move forward.
Oh.
But you can also go into, like, a private chat and just, like, fight with each other about, like, how dumb you are for what you chose. So it's, like, this weird social choose-your-own-adventure experience. So I watched one movie called As Dead As It Gets, and it reminds me a lot of Dead Like Me, that show from, like, I don't know, 15 years ago at this point? God damn. That's from Brian Fuller, one of my favorite TV writers. He wanted to do Hannibal. Mm. He went on to like kick off Star Trek Discovery and then left that. So amazing guy. But this is a show or this is a movie about a world where the dead are kind of still roaming around and they kind of help people who just recently got hurt. And by following their instructions, you could either come back to life. Or you end up being dead forever. If you end up, if you're a ghost, like a half dead person who touches another human, you're dead forever. So that's the that's the like goal of they have to help you avoid, and that you can also, if you're half dead, you cannot see. Everyone else is invisible. So these ghosts have to kind of help you out. It's kind of cool.
This is a 2D, like it's not a VR
normal
game.
Movie. It's a normal movie, and it's a vertical movie too, which is a format I normally hate watching, but. If you're making, this whole thing is made for you to swipe really easily when these decision points come. You can't really do that easily in horizontal because horizontal takes, you have to hold your phone with two hands, So this, you can hold your phone like normal, watch this movie. It's well produced, well written. These are all British productions at this point too. So it feels like I'm watching just like, you know, one of the many random British shows I always watch on Amazon or Netflix or whatever. Except I have a bit of like, decision making. I can choose where the story goes.
And how long is it?
Every play session I think is between, it could be like 10 minutes, it could be like 15 to 20 minutes, but I'll tell you, I sat down, I just felt like I'm gonna check this thing out. I ended up playing like 45 minutes of this thing to get several different endings. I feel like you would get pretty obsessed with it, Sherlyn. So
I'll probably have to check it out. It's like a free app or something.
It's a free app. They're not charging or doing ads or anything right now. It's called What If I, one word. What If I, it's only on iPhone at the moment. Oh, sorry, Sherlyn. Sorry.
Oh, I have an iPhone. I just,
You have an iPhone.
I have an iPhone that I don't use, yes.
Yeah. So there you go. Charge up your iPhone for this. I think it's really cool. And to me, this really proves like, okay, this is using mobile in an interesting way, right? It's using my touchscreen. It's giving me interactivity. It's making it social. I can share clips. I can share photos. I can share screenshots with friends. And I can watch things alongside my friends. All these things that Quibi could not do. Quibi was all about just sitting and watching a dumb show on your phone in both directions. By the way, Quibi just announced that they're going to have Chromecast streaming soon. I think very soon. So
that makes sense.
That's something. Sure. But anyway, check out What If I. I think it's pretty cool. I wrote it up. It didn't get much coverage, but this is a cool. It's from like a couple of European startup founders too. So they're not like big names or anything.
So they're pretty indie.
They're pretty. I mean, $10 million isn't quite indie. But in the world of startups, that's actually not that much for, you know, a first round of funding. So that's the scale I'm talking about here. Compared to Quibi's $2 billion, What If I feels like an indie startup at this point. So I'm looking forward to seeing where they go, and I'm going to play more of these things for sure. So what have you been working on, Sherlyn?
You mean when I'm not crying or when things are not just a blur? This week I've been working on all that Android stuff you see on our site already. We had to do a really quick turnaround on the hands-on, but you know, it feels like I did a show, like this would have been a Google I/O kind of a hands-on. I would have been like crazed trying to get demos from their like demo keynote area and then quickly just killing myself to like write the thing into our CMS and have app like ASAP. And that was basically what I had to do, except for weird like at home, and I don't know.
I kind of feel like that too, by the way, with all the Microsoft crap. So they are spreading out these events in different ways.
Exactly. So they're still happening. They're just taking place in our homes. So that was this week. And then for next week, we're working on a lot of behind the scenes stuff. So I'm taking a bunch of briefings and news coming up, but also our back to school guide is in the works, and also taking some time off. Like between now and the next episode of the podcast, I'll be taking some time off, so I might not, you know, have a lot of work show up on the site. But, you know,
okay,
plenty going on in the background.
You deserve it, Shalyn. And I'll tell you, during your time off, you should probably watch Mythic Quest on Apple TV Plus.
Oh, look at that.
Which is going to be, that's my pick for this week. I've talked about it before. But recently, in the past few weeks, they've done a special episode, a quarantine episode, that is all about, that was clearly just written and produced in the past couple, ooh, you know, months. But it's all about the cast being stuck at home, doing everything over video chat. So it all feels very close to home. And I think it's half an hour, but it really encapsulates like what's so good about Mythic Quest, because it is about these strong personalities, you know, kind of workaholics who don't quite know how to exist if they're not always working, them dealing with the isolation of being under quarantine, and them finding some sort of like connection to each other, even if it's over video chat. You know, you still have your friends, you could still enjoy things and love things together, even though we're all trapped at home. So this episode, I think, is really, it's perfect, it's emotional, and just like really, there's some really cool, hopeful stuff. Like there's the final sequence of this episode, which I will not spoil here, I think is a remarkable bit of engineering and cool stuff. So it's worth watching just for this. But I also think Mythic Quest in general is a great show. It's a great show about being in a workaholic environment, being in a game development studio. It's really funny. It's from Rob McElhenney, one of the guys behind It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Has a great cast. It starts off a little slow, and I've recommended it to people, and they're like, oh, I don't like the first or one or two episodes. I will say stick with it. I think episode 5 is the one where they go like completely on a side story and do like a romantic comedy type thing. I think you'd really love it, Trillin.
Are they like self-contained episodes, or is there an arc that I need to watch the first episode?
You need to watch. It's an arc. You need to watch the whole thing. But the one in the middle is actually pretty self-contained. It kind of weirdly echoes into the modern timeline, but it's kind of a flashback episode that is very much a romantic comedy set in the world of game development, which I kind of love. It's great. So I think binge this, watch the show. It's the perfect thing to dive into if you're still trapped at home. Shalyn, what have you been watching?
Frankly, I haven't been watching a lot lately, other than now that I know how to get HBO Max, I've been re-binging a lot of Friends. But I've also been trying to, you know, get myself educated on, you know, entertainment and content created by Black creators. The really good news is that around last week or 2 weeks ago, when all the Black Lives Matter protests were happening, Michael B. Jordan and I guess his team made their movie Just Mercy completely free on pretty much every platform. So you can go to YouTube and look for it, and then like just hit the rent option. It's just $0.
By the way, a lot of racial justice movies are available for free on every platform now. So iTunes also has like Michael Mann's Ali, which is a crazy good movie that not enough people have seen. But yeah, things like that. So yeah, what did you think of this?
I'll admit, I know I'm recommending it, but I haven't watched it yet. Like, I started watching it, and then I just needed to, like, some time to myself to just decompress, so I couldn't. But the trailer and the... I saw the trailer. It looked really good. Michael B. Jordan, obviously amazing. The premise, you've seen it, Devendra. I'd rather you tell people what you think about it before I just talk about it without knowing.
Yeah, this is a movie that stars Michael B. Jordan as Bryan Stevenson. He's a renowned civil rights defense attorney who moves to Alabama to basically fight for people who are on death row, because he fundamentally believes the death sentence is unjust. And we have this weird situation in this country where we apply justice in really harsh ways. And I personally don't believe in the death penalty either. I don't think a state should be involved in killing its citizens. And this is a movie that just really dives into the humanity of people on death row. Jamie Foxx plays somebody who is there because he's been falsely accused. Ooh. And his city basically put him there because he was an easy victim. Like, they wanted a way to solve this murder. But literally, there's no evidence. There's no motive. There's nothing tying him to this crime. And he ended up spending like 7 or 8 years on death row for this thing he didn't do. And the entire movie is about how this lawyer kind of deals with it. I think it's phenomenal. It's well acted. It's well directed. Destin Daniel Cretton, who is one of my favorite directors working today. He is a Asian Hawaiian director who's been making like really cool, like really interesting things. You should check out Short Term 12, Sherlyn, a movie that will reduce you to a puddle because it's about people working.
Do I really want to be reduced to a puddle again?
Yeah, it's about people working in sort of like a house for orphaned kids and what they everything they have to deal with. And Short Term 12, by the way, is he did that as a short originally, like a short film. But then the actual movie has a phenomenal cast. You know, Brie Larson, Captain Marvel herself, Rami Malek, Lakeith Stanfield. And Brie Larson is also in Just Mercy. They tend to work together a lot. I think he, like, as a director, he is really interesting. And he's also doing a Marvel movie soon. Ooh. He's doing Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings, which I am I'm kind of looking forward to. And that's when it's going to start. Awkwafina and Simu Liu.
I really want to see it.
So this guy's good. His movies are good. And his like range across like dramatic work and all sorts of stuff is great. So how much of the movie did you see, Sherlyn?
I watched like the trailer and then I haven't even really started.
You've not actually watched anything. Okay.
Yeah, but I think that it's important for me to like really study up on racial inequality in this country and to watch stuff by Black creators. Now, you mentioned that this director for this movie has Asian heritage.
Yep.
Which is funny
Hawaiian.
Because...
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's like he's Hawaiian, and you know, and Just Mercy is about Black racial injustice. Mm-hmm. My friend Salima Karoma, she's Black, but she produced a documentary about Asian rappers a while ago, and I wanted to shout out to her because also around the same time last week, her and Spring Hill Entertainment made an announcement that they're going to work together and produce a documentary about Black Wall Street. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really familiar with the history here, Dev. You know your country's history a bit better than I do. Do you want to explain what this is about?
I'll try. I mean, this is a crazy thing of like the basically a white race riot against this very successful Black community in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that happened, you know, decades ago, long, long time ago. But it's a core part of our history, and it's never really taught. It's funny because the first time I've seen it turned, like, actually dramatized is in freaking Watchmen. HBO's Watchmen opens
up. So that's what it was about?
With the Tulsa race riots. And
right.
Yeah. It's a crazy thing. So I'm glad to see that somebody's exploring this more in documentary form.
Yeah. So LeBron James is going to be part of the producing team on this. And Salima is excellent. She's such a great person. And she's already made Bad Rap, which was on the awards circuit for a while.
Now
it's on Netflix and basically every streaming platform. But it's on Netflix for free everywhere else. You kind of have to pay like $2 to $3. But yeah, I mean, she's great. And there's plenty of good work out there by Black creators.
Let me just shout out here too, because like if you look on iTunes or whatever, Amazon, even YouTube, Selma is available for free. Ava DuVernay's incredible Martin Luther King movie. I mentioned Ali, which is a messy movie, but I think the first 15 minutes of that is an incredible work of editing and just like really putting you in the like cultural. In the like place that Muhammad Ali was like in the middle of the civil rights period and how much he fought for representation. And also Ava DuVernay's The 13th or 13th, which is about charting the 13th Amendment, basically connecting slavery and our prison industrial complex. That documentary is up also for free. It's on Netflix too. Definitely worth a watch. If you want like a primer of why everything is so fucked up in America, Sherlyn, like basically watch 13th and then move on from there. Go to Selma. There's a lot of great stuff.
And so that's it for our episode this week, everyone. Thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and I podcast about movies and TV, if you couldn't guess, at slashfilm.com, at the /filmcast there, so check that out.
I tweet about anything but movies and TV, I think, and you can find me at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on any podcast platform of choice, including Spotify.